home of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Live from Hollywood, it's Rated LGBT Radio with your hosts, Jared Miller and Rob Watson.
Good evening. This is Rob Watson, your host for tonight. Welcome to Rated LGBT Radio. Tonight we have a really full program. We are going to be talking about Dreamers and DACA. And DACA is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, a program that President Obama put in place to protect individuals who came to this country as children. They were undocumented and gave them a way to have footing and a future to build upon that wasn't devastating. And recently, President Trump saw fit to end that program. We'll talk about the details on how and why he did that. Tonight, my guest roster includes my co-host, Brody Levesque, a seasoned journalist, not unmatched by one of my guests, Karen Mokum, who is a in charge of the LA Blade and also a highly reputable and seasoned journalist herself, and Jose Guevara, who is an activist, a DACA himself, activist, LGBT activist, and has been through many trials and tribulations and has come out an absolute survivor, and we can't wait to talk to him. So without further ado, let me bring on my esteemed co-host, Brody. Good evening.
Good evening, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing good. I understand before we get started, you actually have some breaking news from L.A. Why don't you bring us up to speed? We do.
This is from the Los Angeles Times. They broke it about an hour and a half ago. Los Angeles City Council members Herb Wesson and Gil Cedillo plan to unveil a motion to label the city a sanctuary for immigrants. This is a move that comes after city leaders resisted formally using the term despite pressure from the local immigration groups. Councilman Wesson said the proposal would formally call Los Angeles a city of sanctuary or a sanctuary city. This is something that has been terribly important to folks, particularly with President Trump's decision this week to scrap the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. We found that a study by the nonpartisan Migration Policy Institute has found that one in four DACA participants actually live in California. There'll be a further discussion on the phrase at the city council meeting on Friday evening, according to Councilman Wesson. Peter Sesley, who is the Los Angeles City pro bono advocate and legal advisor on immigration issue, has released a report today that recommends that the city become a Dreamer arrest free zone. And we'll have to see how this plays out overall. I tried to get a hold of Mayor Garcetti's office, but I wasn't able to get a comment back on that. However, previously the mayor has said to the Los Angeles Times, as well as to others of us, that even though he is a forceful immigrant rights advocate in Los Angeles, he's resisted using that phrase sanctuary city because, according to Mayor Garcetti, it doesn't accurately describe the city's policies. Councilman Wesson indicated that he hasn't talked to the mayor yet about the term. And at this point, the spokesperson for the mayor indicated that Los Angeles is a national leader in protecting the immigrant communities, but he himself also did not address the proposed sanctuary label. So we'll have
Brody, can you, for myself and for others who may not know the depth of that, what exactly does that label mean as a sanctuary city?
In most cases, a sanctuary city means that the administration, including the law enforcement for that particular city, will not process federal statutes And at this point, it's a thing where local authorities will not hold immigrants or undocumented individuals for U.S. immigration officials if there were no violent felonies on their records and they weren't currently facing charges. The thing about a sanctuary city is that it's basically saying to the federal government that we are not going to enforce federal law. That's basically what sums it up.
But to be clear, that isn't really a perfect safety net, and I'm going to talk to you about that from personal experience. Is up here in Santa Cruz, I believe this area is considered also to be sanctuary city. However, we have had ICE action where people have been rounded up and deported, even though the local authorities didn't set it up or weren't cooperating or coordinating, it still was going on anyway.
Well, this is true. And San Francisco, of course, has long declared itself a sanctuary city as far back as 28 years ago, 1989. And then again, when they restrengthened their ordinances in 2013. However, California Governor Jerry Brown hasn't indicated one way or the other if he's going to take a cue from the actions of these cities, in particular Los Angeles. The governor has indicated that he is not a fan of wanton, destructive immigration policies, but the governor hasn't gone to further delineate out his position on that.
Right. Well, without further ado, I want to bring on our guests. First, Karen Oakham, who I had the very great honor and pleasure of actually sitting down and having coffee with this week live in person. Can you imagine that? Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and I really enjoyed our coffee conversation as well.
I did, too, and I was actually thrilled to realize that I actually knew you from a past life, from the 80s in L.A., who would have thought? You know, so that was actually a very cool thing. Plus, Brody, Karen's already given me a writing assignment that I'm hot on the track of, so there you go.
That's
so, Karen, let me turn to you in terms of if you can frame this for us in terms of what has happened with DACA? What is the story that is going on right now?
Well, I think that our other guest might be more on top of that. I mean, I'm sitting here reading news stories and talking to people, but he's living it. So, you know, maybe he can jump in.
He is. Okay, well, and with that hint, we will welcome our very special guest, Jose, onto the program. Jose, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. I have read your bio, and you are amazing. I mean, what you have gone through, survived, and come out, there are very few people I meet who are true phoenixes, and you seem to be that. Can you give us a framework of DACA and how this latest action has affected you personally?
DACA is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, and it was a program that Obama instated in his presidency to give some temporary relief to young individuals like myself who came here when we were really young. Most of the average of people went before they were six. Most of us are around 22 right now. What this would give us is a two-year we would be protected from deportation. We would be allowed to get a work permit, and that would open the doors to get a license. In some states, it would open the door to in-state tuition. In other states, it would not. That would vary from state to state. But in a nutshell, it would give us some breathing time to try to live the best of our American dream. But now with this actions taken by the administration, it's all gone. So in order for you to receive DACA, you have to sign up with the federal government. You have to you have to pass background checks. You have to do fingerprinting. You have to pay 65, I believe, when I first applied. Now it's 495. So there's, I think, 100% of us are safe when it comes to pass. 100% of the recipients that have DACA right now have passed all these background checks, and 91% of them are employed right now.
Right. It's, I mean, there's the strength of the DACA participants is amazing. Jose, is there a path for DACA participants towards full citizenship? Is there a process to progress to that, or how would that happen?
Whenever I get asked this question, I like to tell people that I can't become American by merit. I can only become American by marriage. So let's say if my companion or my partner is an American citizen, he might be able to sponsor me, but that can trigger other things that might mean that I have to go back to my country and wait 5 years or until the immigration sends me a letter saying that I can come back. There is no legal path. There is no line that we can get in line of.
So
there's
even
also serious opposition to that too as well.
Yeah. So even in its current state, it's not a perfect program. It's not. Yeah. So what now, Donald Trump, and I'm going to ask this of all three of you guys, because Sarah Huckabee was on
Before we leave the explanation here, I think that it's important, maybe Jose can expound on this too, that DACA was set to expire on March 5th anyway. So, and the Trump administration is not going to process any new DACA applications. And right now, it's my understanding that there's a real scramble to renew the current DACA status for another 2 years, and the deadline for that is October 5th. So even with the yo-yo effect of Trump and his tweets and policy, there's still this other process going on. Am I correct in that, Jose? Are you applying
That's
for
accurate.
A two-year renewal? And do you have an attorney to help you with this? Or how is that? Do you have to fork over another $500?
So if your work permit ends before March 5th, you have to renew before October the 10th, I believe is correct. And if you don't do that, you won't be eligible to get the 2 years. So all those people whose work permits expire before March the 5th have to scramble to get in their applications before October the 10th, I believe, the deadline. So you have about a month right now. I've already submitted my renewal. I submitted it last month. So I was already in the process of it. I'm just waiting. I already did biometrics and just waiting for them to approve it.
So good,
and conversations
good information.
I had, and conversations I had today with Senator Lindsey Graham's office, one of the things that's most important to note, and this is important for people like Jose, one of the fixes to this is what we call the DREAM Act. And this now becomes a real push as a must-pass bill. Frank Sherry, who's the executive director of America's Voice Education Fund, said in a statement that Trump's action yesterday means that the DREAM Act is now a must-pass bill. This is an emergency. Congress has to act on it immediately. It should be added to any moving vehicle in the Congress. In other words, attach it to any piece of legislation to get a vote, particularly with the debt ceiling vote coming up. The thing that's becoming kind of problematic about this is while we're getting signs that there's a lot of support in the Senate for kids like Jose, we're starting to see a lot of resistance, particularly from the House Freedom Caucus. Speaker Ryan has also indicated that he's not sure he can get passage. The Senate's saying they can get passage. Now, this was one of the things that the president said when he threw it back at Congress, was he was specifically referring back to this DREAM Act. And, of course, at this point, it's a matter of harnessing enough votes. The DREAM Act would become the pathway for legal status for people like Jose and other DREAMers and other DACA people. The current situation as it stands is that DACA is simply a renewable program that allows them to work and, you know, be educated in the United States. It's not a fix. There is no pathway, and this has been part of the problem. This is one of the reasons that there has been a push to get this DREAM Act put through. And as I said, Graham's office is telling me there is support for it, but they're looking at resistance from the House.
Well,
right.
Isn't there?
So, and
they don't want to stand alone. I mean, who wants to stand alone? And the Freedom Caucus, as I understand it, are saying that they will reject anything that's tied to any other bill, especially lifting the debt ceiling, and then wind up showing up the Democrats as obstructionists for putting the DREAM, attaching the DREAM Act as an amendment. Can you clarify any of that? Because that seems pretty confusing. I mean, you have a ready-to-go standalone, but nobody wants to vote for it as a standalone.
Well, that's the problem. Vinita Gupta, who is the CEO of the Leadership Conference, indicated that one of the most important things about this is that the DREAM Act needs to be passed without amendment. Gupta said that countless members of Congress from both sides of the aisle have spoken out against the actions that the Trump administration took. But he also indicated that it's now time, you know, for Congress to make these adjustments and to do something for kids like Jose. This puts them in a jackpot. The problem is, in the congressional process, we're seeing resistance to a standalone act, and now we've got other people saying, well, let's attach it through on legislation, which is already pending and running through. We have seen this before. Rob, if you and Karen will remember, a few years back, that's how the Matthew Shepard James Burke Hate Crimes Act was passed. It was attached to the National Defense Reauthorization Act. Mm-hmm. So there is a vehicle. What we're hearing is people need this vehicle, but the immediate problem for Jose and any of the other dreamers is, and this is one of the things that Jose can probably say much better than myself or anyone else, but that's the real world impact and the human impact of the fear and of the uncertainty and what they're looking towards. You know, in Jose's case in particular, you know, in the worst case scenario, if he is returned to El Salvador, he is at risk. His very life is at risk only because of the violence of the gangs in El Salvador, many of them who are deported from the streets of Los Angeles, are highly homophobic. His life is at risk. So these are some of the things that Congress really does need to take into consideration. But I'll let Jose address that.
Right. Well, before that, though, I want to ask this one question because I want to frame what you guys are talking about. You're going into specifics. I want to get some of the lay of the land established here. Sarah Huckabee was on The View, and she presented on there almost a defense of Trump's action, not so much making him right, but making him essentially a facilitator to where the real problem area in the government is on this, which is the Congress, which is what you guys are talking about right now. And her point is that Trump really had no choice but to take this action. And I want to reality check that assertion with you guys. So she was saying that because this was by Obama essentially a temporary program, to Karen's point, it was expiring, and there are lawsuits that are going into the courts now against it. And should those lawsuits win, there would be no buffer time, you know, deadline for Congress to act, any of that. Let me finish the question. There would be no time period. There apparently is a lawsuit from the governor of Idaho, from what I've seen. But the so her justification was Trump was simply forcing Congress to do what they needed to be doing, and that people should be protesting not at Trump Tower, but at the Capitol. Is she accurate? Is this a Republican in Congress problem, or is this Trump being a jerk?
Do we have to make a choice, an either or can they be both?
No, we can have both.
What do you think, Jose?
Yeah, Jose, give us your thoughts on this.
I think he could have fought it in court. He had 20 attorney generals ready, 20 attorney generals in the District of Columbia ready to stand with him in court, and he chose not to. And to add injury to the wound, he sends Jeff Sessions to portray us as adult lawbreakers in the rule of law, and it's just when weeks ago he pardoned Jeff Arpaio, who's done so much unrealistic stuff to our community. So I do think he had a choice, and I think it was just an easy way out, and he kicked the ball out of his court and was like, yeah, let me just deflect this, but it didn't work.
I think Jose is right. I think the other part of this was animus, because New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who was one of the attorney generals that filed suit on Wednesday against the administration for DACA, said, and this is quoting the Attorney General of the state of New York, it's clear that President Trump's DACA repeal would cause huge economic harm to New York, and that it's driven by President Trump's personal anti-Mexican bias. And, you know, there was 15 other states plus the District of Columbia, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Iowa, Massachusetts, New Mexico, North Carolina, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, Washington, and, of course, D.C. And California's Attorney General Javier Becerra said that he, too, will probably join that suit. And everyone.
Oh, no,
people,
he's filing a separate one.
Oh, he's going to file a separate one? Okay, we'll see. Everyone's referring back to the animus. And as Jose just pointed out, you know, and Jose hit the nail right on the head. Yeah, he sent Sessions out. Sessions is, you know, he's got a track record for being a racist, pure and simple. Sessions was giddy.
So now going back to what you guys were talking about Congress, I have a question for you on that. The Freedom Caucus itself is not a large group unless the issue is one where all of the other Republicans are voting one way. They are the ones that can pull out and keep the Republicans from getting majority. But if those are the original, the middle of the road Republicans, for lack of a better term, and the Democrats are in agreement, wouldn't the Freedom Caucus be essentially powerless?
No,
because
they'll
wind up getting people primaried.
Yeah. They are a very influential and powerful political influence. We fought them during the Hartzler Amendment process. It got a little ugly. And if you'll remember, it was the Freedom Caucus chair that did the end run and went to the vice president when the Hartzler Amendment was shot down. So they are politically potent.
And they're the ones that got Speaker Boehner to resign. So, you know, and they're threatening Ryan. They're threatening everyone. And the deal is that they can tap into this weird Trump base. I mean, everybody's so concerned about being primaried. I mean, Brody, you probably remember this, Rob, maybe you too. During the Watergate hearings, impeachment hearings, and Jose, I don't even know if you were alive during this period, but it's really important historically. But, you know, it was a matter of conscience for Republican members of the House to come out and vote for impeachment of Richard Nixon for corruption. And, you know, for violating the law, essentially. And they knew that they would lose their seat for doing it. These folks are just too cowardly. Instead of standing up and saying, well, there are a couple of them, Jeff Flake and Lisa Murkowski and Lindsey Graham, as you were noting, and a couple of them are standing up. But you know Jeff Flake is going to be primaried. There are a lot of people, and so they've got to be willing to stand with their conscience and risk losing their congressional seat. And that's what's happening. A lot of them are too cowardly to do that.
Right, right.
And those are the so-called moderates. I mean, for the biggest part of the problem here, and today, here's a perfect example. Kids just like Jose comprise an activist organization called United We Dream. And today, United We Dream was all over the Russell Hart Dirksen Senate office buildings, lobbying senators direct as they were walking through the hall. There's actual footage of this on Twitter. You know, when they had a senator like John Corwin of Texas, he was completely shutting them down, and this is not the way to approach it, this, that, and the other thing. And Corwin has bowed to the House Freedom Caucus more than once, just even on procedural things to get stuff through Leader McConnell. On the Senate side, you see the same kids, just like Jose, talking to California Senior Senator Dianne Feinstein, and it was an actual conversation between those kids like Jose and that senator. There's the difference. And I think it's important to note, and I keep hammering away at this, but we had the protests out in front of the White House. We had the protests on the Hill. You know, these kids, like Jose, are very much at risk. And it's
they're not kids, though. I mean, we're speaking from our age perspective, but the thing is, Jose, I'm sure you can speak to this. You know, the deal is that this isn't just about work permits. This is about college. This is about health care. This is about so many other things that, you know, Jose, in the bio that you sent out to us, you know, it's really remarkable what a survivor you are. And for you, it's everyday life as a young, undocumented LGBT person in, you know, in Los Angeles.
I can't imagine that as an everyday life. It really is. But I think, yeah, for me, I'm not a child anymore. I'm 23 now. But just pointing back at it, DACA, you can apply for it before your 17th birthday. So a couple, many of us are kids for all intents and purposes. They're babies.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the requirements for you to get DACA is that you had to come here before your 15th birthday. So, yeah, it's true. We are talking about the billions of dollars that are being lost because of DACA, which is what most of the people think. But we the reason why I think those senators won't listen to the people, because I was thinking about why is it easier for us to talk to California legislators, is because I'm protected. I'm protected. I was in the resist march in California, and I was on the stage, and it was beautiful. But I know I'm protected. I know that the police department's on my part. I know I'm very outspoken about being undocumented, being LGBT. But the reality is that I lived in a bubble. The Pat Brown Institute has often said that California is 10 years ahead of the rest of the country, and I am safe. There, the people that are perhaps in those districts, they probably have undocumented immigrants like myself there, but they don't know who they are because those DACA recipients are not able to self-identify for fear of repercussions, for fear of their safety. They don't know what's going to happen. Eyes might call on them. People might look at them differently. I have a safety network here in LA that they don't have. So it is people not listening, but they're not listening because they can't hear us. I mean, some of them are probably not listening because they can't hear us, but they're also not letting us speak out of safety.
Right. So
that's the biggest issue.
Yeah, you made the point that you know a vast majority percentage of DACA are employed. And that actually, when we look in the specifics, it's more than just employed. DACA people, individuals, are vital, important people in our society, including paramedics that were working in the hurricane, doing heroic things, you know, public servants. You know, these are vital and important individuals. In the LGBT community, this includes, you know, tens of thousands, almost 100,000 individuals, many of which are trans, who have health needs, you know, that that they're, you know, in process with medication. You know, a lot of lives are literally at risk. I mean, if not their life itself, as Brody pointed out, being returned to a hostile environment in another country, but also just the path that they have chosen and that they are fulfilling and contributing. Can you give us some more specifics of people you know that their stories and what how they're being impacted?
Yeah, personally, yeah, it's a different ballgame when you're queer, right? And that's whether you're an American citizen or not. Your life is at risk at any moment, depending on where you live. But yes, I loved how you pointed out that, yes, El Salvador is a very homophobic country. Abortion is still illegal. There's people who are incarcerated for having an for having a miscarriage. This is the reality that we're going into. The country does not protect and the LGBT individuals. Many times, rape and everything goes unnoticed. And the gangs are not very friendly to anybody who's LGBT. So this is real for people who are from Central America or any other country that are not as welcoming to their LGBT community. But yeah, I know a couple of people who most of us are contributing. I mean, I'm a student and I have two jobs right now. And last year I had to pay like $300 to the government out of my taxes, and that seems like a little bit, but that's like a lot for someone who is working two part-time jobs and is a full-time student. I know counselors, I know teachers, I know paramedics. I mean, we're everywhere. If you look at the statistics of dreamers, a lot of them, especially in California, went on to be lawyers, went on to be, I know a lot of counselors. There's just many of us are in our I know a couple who are in their master's programs, and all of this is putting their life on the jeopardy because they get the degree and then they can't work it. They can't do anything with that. So that opens no doors. That I think someone said that. The Attorney General of California said that we didn't become the fifth largest economy by not letting our youth produce and become active members of society.
Mm-hmm.
Jose, let me ask you this, because I think this is really kind of important. In a lot of ways, I think that people, when we talk about people that are DACA dreamers or folks like you, it becomes an abstract and an academic discussion. And that's one of the things that I have a hard time with as a journalist, because at the end of the day, we're talking about people living, breathing, feeling human beings. What's the most important thing of anything that you want to tell our listeners about you and your fellow dreamers? What's the most important thing that you want to get across to me, to Karen, to Rob, and our listeners?
That the most important thing that I always try to get across to people is that you shouldn't defend us because we can contribute to your country. We shouldn't defend us because of the billions of dollars that we contribute to your economy. You shouldn't defend us because we take care of your kids. We should defend us because it's a moral obligation to do so. We were children when we came. We don't know any other country. You're sending us to danger, and that's not an American value in any sense of the word.
Mm-hmm. Great
well
for that.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
That's exactly the animus that the attorney generals are talking about the hatred for a specific group. I mean, we just experienced this with the transgender military ban as well. But, you know, Trump during the campaign promised to take care of LGBT people, and he said he loved the dreamers.
Yeah,
and then he rides down the damn escalator, talking about Mexicans or rapists and, you know, all of this stuff. It is specifically targeting one group, and where we're concerned, it's targeting its animus to two groups, LGBT Latinos and Asians and other people who are dreamers as well.
Yeah, and you know, that's true, especially for the LGBT community. Like, our liberation is embodied on your liberation. And if one day they come for us, the next day they're going to come for anybody who's not the normative, especially for people of color, for people who don't fit the what Trump sees. I mean, it's really dumbfounding, because here in school we have a group that's led by, and I won't mention their name, but it's led by this LGBT individual who's a Republican, and he really does not stand with the Dream Act. He thinks that we need to go back home, and it's heartbreaking to see our own community not worry about us. I mean, many of us rejoice with y'all when marriage equality passed, but the reality is that it's more than that. You know, you can't just look back. You can't just utilize us when you need something. You need to show up also when we need you
and
to show up.
Jose, just for the record, just to let you know, if they come for you, they're coming for me. So, you know, yeah, message
Thank
received.
You.
Or, yeah, it's we are family, and that's just the way it is. Karen and Brody, with your knowledge of the infrastructure and everything else, what is your directive and advice for activists to stop this? What do activists do to make this stop and to set this right?
I
understand
the
problem with the Freedom Caucus. What do we do?
I think the most important thing is that we continue to watch them work these actions like United We Dream did today on Capitol Hill. We continue to have voices like Jose's, you know, heard. You know, let me do this. Jose, former Mexican President Vicente Fox sent a statement. I'd like to read that to you if you don't mind. I know he's not your former president, but he's Latino. President Fox was addressing the decision to rescind the program. And President Fox said the following, referring to President Trump. "You failed America. Canceling DACA is the worst action you have ever done against the ones who cannot defend themselves. It is cruel. It is heartless. You are so mistaken. The future of any country is the minorities, which will be majorities in a few years. You cannot stop the change, the progress, the future of that great nation." I think that President Fox's sentiments probably hold true more than anything else. And for, you know, people like you, Jose, and I realize that you're from El Salvador, but it's still the same, you know, the same thought processes through it. And I really honestly believe that. I think that what you guys are doing and what you're saying and being vocal about it, I'm going to recommend that you probably get together with Karen and you guys, you know, continue this conversation in her publication right there in Los Angeles, because I think that having you profiled in the LA Blade and really talking about this is critically important, that we need this. Yeah. You know, Jose, the most important thing, and I say this, you know, I've been 40 years a political reporter, I can tell you the most important thing, okay, that I've ever learned was from someone from history that you probably read about. His name was Thomas P. O'Neill. He was a speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives during President Reagan's time in office, and I interviewed Speaker O'Neill. He had a mantra that he actually had carved and sitting on his desk, and it said, "All politics is lawful." And what Speaker O'Neill meant was that no matter where you're at, in a larger sense or a smaller sense, it boils down to local people like you. And then when I was in that interview, the speaker leaned over and he said, "Now, Brody, I want you to remember this too. Politics is the art of persuasion and perception. They go hand in hand." Jose, if there's any message I can give you, is politics really is the art, okay, of persuasion and perception, okay? You persuade, and that's going to cause a perception, and then you can flip those two around. Karen?
I want to follow up on that, but actually I think, Jose, you actually already addressed this yourself, because you were talking about the difficulty of people coming out as being undocumented, and there is a parallel to coming out as undocumented and coming out as LGBT. It's difficult. You're going to lose friends. You have difficulty with family. In this case, you know, there may be difficulty with law enforcement, which is a whole other thing. I think that as a journalist, what we do look at are the numbers. So that if you and a couple of friends get together with some signs and protest outside of ICE detention, I've done stories about that here. As a matter of fact, a story that I did, this was working with somebody who was at AHF, and there was a local fellow who was undocumented, YOLO, who was in stuck in ICE detention, and he was, you know, head of his GSA at his high school, and he was very popular and smart and the whole thing, but he got busted and put in ICE detention, and so a couple of people got in touch with me, and even though they showed up with only maybe about 20, 25 people, they also had his mother, who did not speak English, they had a lot of signs, and they called me. So I did a story on the protest, which in and of itself amplified the action. And a lawyer found out, read that story, and offered to help YOLO out pro bono for free, which eventually got him out of ICE detention. So there's this chain reaction that happens. And you know this, I'm sure, as well on social media. Somebody will post something, it'll get shared, et cetera, et cetera. But part of the thing that I'm trying to raise to you and that Brody brought up is that mainstream media looks at numbers. How many people showed up? You know, so any sort of press release that goes out, you say, we'll have these signs, we're expecting X number of people, you know, some local elected who might draw attention, et cetera. Hitting the streets draws attention. And that is brought to the attention of the electeds as well. And that's part two of the advice, which is that, you know, you need to team up with like Equality California or the Democratic Party or SEIU, some labor union, you know, join these existing organizations in their efforts to challenge Republicans in 2018 and let that be known now. Because if the threat to Republicans is that the Freedom Caucus is going to primary their people, you need to be the foot soldiers and say, hell, we're going to draw attention to these people too because we need them on our side. And if you don't support, you know, DACA, then you're against young people, and young people are the future of this country. And as you said in the very beginning, don't defend us because of this, that, or the other. Defend us because it's a moral issue. And right. That's what you need to remind not only the Republicans, but the Democrats as well. So, and Karen, you can use people like me to get that message across.
Yeah, Karen, I think that's brilliant. I would expand that beyond Jose, though. We need to do that. We need to be the ones doing that.
I've been doing that.
No, I know you guys are.
I believe
but,
in intersectionality.
I'm talking about the activists who are listening right now who want to do something about this. It's like we are with the DACA. We are with the Dreamers. We need to be the ones doing exactly the action items you outlined, you know, not leave it to people like Jose.
Yeah, but we can't identify as such. Now, Jose Varga can because he's both undocumented, and he came out as undocumented, and he's a journalist. He's an activist journalist. But for people like Brody and me, we cannot, or, you know, we're sort of the old-fashioned objective journalists.
Not you personally. I mean, because you guys are, you're our guard to tell the story. But we need the activists who are listening to this program who want to know what to do. They do not need to be dreamers to do this. They can be activists and go do exactly what you prescribed, which was brilliant.
It's called an ally.
Ally and family. Jose, I want to ask you, because we've talked about your personal story, and you have been a survivor of leukemia three times in your young life. You have fought the tough fights. What strength did you get from that you think is gearing you up for this fight?
When I was doing a piece with, I believe it was Fusion, they asked me the same thing, and I told them the same thing, that that every day that I went through chemo and or whenever I was in my lowest point, I always thought, okay, this is it. Like, I'm not waking up. And regardless, like, I always woke up. I always kept going. So that was the same thing, you know, like, sometimes you're in your darkest moment and your darkest hour. But the reality is the sun is going to come out the next day until it's not. And that's all you can do. But that's pretty much what kept me going through all those chemo treatments and the bone marrow transplant. But I want to go back to what you said about the allies and what we can do. You know, I have this conversation with my partner all the time. I tell him, like, listen, your people are in North Carolina. That's a state that it's red. And, like, you need to talk to them. And it's going to be uncomfortable, but that's okay. It's getting that message across state lines. Like, it's
so
getting,
how
it's getting...
do you, but Jose, how do you start that uncomfortable conversation? Because people will just go, oh, uncomfortable, I'm not going to do it. How do you start that uncomfortable conversation?
You humanize it. You humanize it. You, my roommate, she's a white female, and it's the same thing. She goes, listen, my roommate's undocumented, and my partner's undocumented. You humanize it. You don't make it about the issue, but you make it about one person. Mm-hmm. Like, do you realize that by doing this, you're hurting someone that I love, and in one sense, you're hurting me.
We had a show recently, to your point, on the transgender ban in the military, and the transgender activist that was on it, and Karen, maybe you even made the point that one of the, not benefits, but one of the sideline things that was going on as a result of this was trans people's stories got told, and people began to know who these trans heroes were serving in our military. And that's a good thing. And ultimately that would help win the fight. Jose, is this an issue where people will feel brave enough to tell their stories, or is this oppressively fearful that they really need to go into hiding for their own safety?
For dreamers, it's a little different, and a lot of the times people won't want to tell the stories when they're in states that they can't do that. But if someone has disclosed to you, and you, like I said, you're in a blue state and you came across a dreamer, or you know someone that, and we all love a dreamer, we just don't open our ears and listen sometimes, and it's up to you to read. To deliver that message. And one encore conversation I had with my roommate was that her family is not going to listen to me. They're already closed off, but they will listen to her because they have some sort of respect for her. So sometimes that's how you change hearts. But I think we need to make it okay for dreamers to come out. And I have to go back to class now, but I really want to thank you all for having me. Night classes suck, but thank you so much for, you know, I think it's important that.
Pleasure. And Jose, I want to ask you, if you are available Saturday night, I would love to have you also on my Out in Santa Cruz show at 7 to 8 p.m. this Saturday evening. Would that be possible?
No, yeah, that's totally possible. I think that it's important that when we're talking about dreamers, we do have a dreamer present. Or when we're talking about DACA students, we do have a DACA student present. I think that's what something that bugs me about the mainstream media is that often we're talking with this DACA expert, or we're talking with this migrant policy expert, but I'm like, you don't know anything of what it means to be any of this. All you know is numbers and the legal aspect of it.
And he makes a valid point because I am a member of the mainstream media. Jose, thank you so very, very much for your time. We really sincerely appreciate you coming on, talking to us about your story. And more importantly, we appreciate the fact that you're out there and you're fighting for everyone. Well done, young man.
Totally appreciate
it.
Yeah, Jose, I will be in touch about Saturday, so we will count on it. You are not done with us yet. You're going to be on Out in Santa Cruz. And Northern California is going to hear your story as well. You are a hero in my book, and I mean it sincerely. I'm standing with you. They are not going to hurt you. They'll have to go over me first and everybody like me. So that's my commitment.
Thank you so much.
So we'll talk
to you
soon.
And I'll be back in touch with you as well. So
thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on. I'm glad we could make this happen.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
And
I'll
have
a
good class
Saturday, and we'll stay in touch.
Okay.
Yeah, great.
Take care, young man.
So, Brody and Karen, we've got a few more minutes left. This is tough. This is a tough thing. What other occasions? We're talking about almost a million people that lives mm-hmm. being disrupted. I'm hearing story after story of family members that, can be ripped away. We're looking at hurricanes where we're seeing physical damage. This is like a hurricane in itself. Can you give us some more faces to this?
I think one of the things. Go ahead.
Well, I just in a lot of ways the biggest part of this that I'm hearing from the immigration groups on Capitol Hill, in Washington, and I'm hearing from a few others, including Karen's colleague Michael Labers at the Washington Blade, is that not enough people are paying attention to these stories. It's the conversation's an abstract. It almost becomes an academic exercise. And you see that especially with the way that the Senate and House Republicans have been reacting to it. And as Jose just put out, our profession is a little bit at fault for this because we have a tendency to put the so-called experts on there. They're not getting to the root cause of it, and that's the very human part of the story. And I think that really is the most important thing that we need to do is we've got to put the spotlight on, the humanity aspect of this, and we've got to get away from making it, an academic exercise of treaties on, on human rights. It's just that's not the way to do it.
Yeah, I think there's this characterization. I got questions from people when I put out the promotion for this show, and there were questions about, that characterized all DACAs in pretty much one category, almost like the, do they qualify for Obamacare? Do they, not as these are employed people. These are integrated in. There are going to be people who, yes, might be, on Medi-Cal or whatever, and I don't even know if they qualify for that, but that potentially they are. But these are people that are on corporate health plans and, are part of civil service health plans because they are integrated in. They're living full lives. They are not just entrants into society, even though this is a legal description that implies that they are. They're us. I mean, they're us.
Yeah.
I'd like to make two quick points. First of all, one of the things that I tried to refer to earlier is that, we tend to look at Dreamers and DACA recipients primarily as Latino or from Central or South America, when in fact, and especially from the LGBT community, we have a whole lot of Asians, and Asians from all over. I mean, Philippines, South Korea, China, Japan, I mean, on and on and on. I mean, we are in California here. We are the Pacific Rim. So we're having an influx, especially people fleeing. I mean, remember those kids, unaccompanied kids at the border? I mean, so we have people fleeing violence from the South, and we have people fleeing, and especially now with the craziness with North Korea, fleeing from all sorts of places in Asia. So that's number one. We need to sort of broaden the horizon about who we include in Dreamers and DACA. Secondly, imagine if you're somebody who just falls short of being qualified for DACA. Because everybody's talking about the DACA recipients as they're the good ones. They're the ones
right.
that make the straight A's. Well, what if you just don't qualify? Are you discounted as a human being? So the Dreamers, DACA is a program for the Dreamers, but the Dreamers is larger than DACA. And we need to remember that, having somebody else define who the good ones are, I mean, that's a Jeff Sessions frame. And
right.
We ought not to be doing that. So just those two sort of caveats as we move ahead thinking about
this. Yeah, Karen's right. You know, Karen brought up a point that I had totally forgot. A few years ago, George Lopez, the comedian, did an outstanding film based on a true story of a high school in Arizona that participated in the robotics contest at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And this particular team was made up of Latinos, but three or four of them were undocumented. And they weren't DACA. They were just undocumented going to school. And that team, by the way, won, okay, the robotics championship that year. And it was an amazing thing. I don't remember the name of George's movie, but off the top of my head. But this is speaking directly to Karen's point. I think that we need to be very cognizant of the fact that there are other minority groups within the minority groups, as it were, that are, in fact, from different ethnicities and different cultures and things like that. It's the overarching thing for me is that we've got to start moving away from this trying to stereotype and trying to put every peg in its hole, because I think really at the end of the day that perpetuates the racist attitudes in society, and unfortunately this is a major problem with the United States, and I think we really need to find a way to work around that. I think that by telling the stories of kids, you know, like Jose and other kids and the trans kids, we really need to do that. And I know that I'm using the word kids because, you know, my age, obviously, but, you know, I mean young people, okay?
You're not that old, Brody.
And it's not meant pejoratively.
Yeah, well, exactly. The movie was called, I just remembered it. The movie is called Spare Parts. It was produced in 2015, and it was released by Lionsgate Entertainment. So, yeah, it's called Spare Parts. But it is a true story, and it is something that I think is really worthwhile. If you guys want to watch it, you probably should. But George does a wonderful job. George, I like a lot. But this is the type of thing that it talks about this. Okay, by the way, that particular high school beat MIT, the university. Mm-hmm. These were high school kids, and they beat MIT.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, so, guys, we have one more. We have 2 minutes left, so I can give you each 1 minute to sum up your thoughts on DACA for this evening. Karen, why don't you go first?
Well, I think that something you said earlier, you know, strikes with me deep down, which is that, you know, and it's the Holocaust reference. You know, first they came for this one, and I was not that, so I turned away, you know. And eventually they came for me, and there was no one there to help. I mean, we used to talk about humanity, you know, about brothers and sisters, if you will, not to resurrect Bernie Sanders on this, but I miss that. I miss that sense of you know, just what we just saw fighting the Hurricane Harvey, you know, where people turn out to help each other. That's what we're about. And that's what this guy is thumbing his nose at and trying to reverse with people with white supremacists like Jeff Sessions being giddy at making this racist announcement. We are not that. We are not that. And, you know, I get pretty passionate about this. I have to be less so when I write, but I am just so disturbed by what's happening to our country, and we cannot allow it to happen. And unfortunately, we are.
You know what? And we're going to make that the final word on it because we're out of time, and it was brilliant. So, Karen, thank you for joining. Brody, as always, you are a saint. You are my hero. and you are a kid, despite the fact that you think you're not. I've got evidence to the contrary. So anyway, thank you. You have been listening to Rated LGBT Radio. Also listen to Out in Santa Cruz, especially since Jose will be our guest this Saturday night. So we will continue some part of this conversation. And it's important, and it's important you get involved. Thank you for listening. Thursday, we have another exciting show coming your way. I'm Rob Watson, and good night.